and it will be made available on the webpage. Go back to sharing the syllabus. Okay, so so now that you can hear me, so this is the syllabus, which, as I said, you probably have already managed to find since you found the password. All right, but let's see, just running through things briefly, things to notice. Okay, someone posted the correct link. Good, all right. I will be assigning homework after every lecture. So there'll be one assigned this afternoon that'll be due on Wednesday, sometime Wednesday. And then continuing, let's see, the homework will come. So most of the text that I will be following will be the notes by Hunter. And then the homework problems will mostly come from the other textbook, Understanding Analysis by Abbott. There are two editions of that, first and second. I have added a link to the second edition. I have a hard copy of the first. Homework problems I may assign from either one. If I assign them from the first, I will put up a photo at least of the problem, so you don't need to have access to that. Okay, let's see. You can see the cursor, good. So I'm also trying to encourage people turning on cameras, and also answering questions that I pose. So and I think what I'm gonna try is something here under participation, something that Professor Vatsarani said worked a little bit for her, so maybe I'll try that. So if you're interested, I think I'll have each day, except of course for today, people who are designated to sort of have their cameras on for the session, and also people who are designated to make sure that someone answers the questions that I ask. And so, and if people want to email, if they're willing to volunteer for one or the other of those, then each day you do that, you get a point, and up to 5 points. Okay. I do find that, at least for me, if I have my camera on, I tend to pay attention better to things. That's true for many people. Okay, let's see. So that's one of the odd things. I think most of the rest is pretty clear. There will be a midterm as written here, which will be proctored, and a final, which is not. There's an honor code to write on each of your homework and exams. And everything else is pretty self-explanatory. So are there any questions about the organization of the course? Okay, yeah, so the way the participation points will work, my plan for the participation points was that you would only, that it's good to comment and whatnot, but there would be people who were designated to comment in the chat, as you just did, for each day, and they would get the points for that day. So so you should just email me if you want to be designated for some day, and then I will do that. I'll designate people for different days. But anyone else obviously can answer and whatnot. That's fine and encouraged. Okay, other questions or comments before we start in the material? Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So we will have a quiz tomorrow.
Oh, sorry, yes. Thank you, I ought to have mentioned that. Yes. And the grading scheme also, I should have emphasized here under grading, is there will be quizzes every section, including tomorrow, and homeworks pretty much every day, including, again, that'll be due Wednesday. But the idea of the grading scheme is that only the top 25 of those assignments will count. And let's see, since there are about 28 lecture days and one of them will be midterm, so there are probably around 26 homework assignments and 9 or 10 quizzes. So there'll be about 10 more assignments than you will end up counting. So that basically the more quizzes, the better from that perspective, because you just throw them out and just count the top 25, okay? The homework and everything else will be posted on my website, which is accessible from the Canvas homepage. It should be, unless the link is messed up, but that it'll be on my page. Other questions? Okay, pretty good. Then let me switch to my board. So let's see, as mentioned, this is advanced calculus, and it's sort of appropriate. I don't know how much you know about calculus as historically, but it was invented by Newton in 1666 when he was like a super senior, fifth year undergraduate at Cambridge. Only there had been a two-year plague, and so he was stuck at home, unable to go to classes, and instead he invented calculus. So this is a while away from school. Due to the plague. So that's kind of its sort of bizarre history, but it turned out to be remarkably useful, and so we continue to use it today. Okay, and the other interesting thing about this particular class is that the many computational aspects of calculus you've already studied in Math 21, and you shouldn't try to forget that, and we're still going to use that, but but we're going to add some stuff to it. And so let me just briefly summarize what the course covers. And I guess since you've taken part A, you have some idea, but we'll be doing the following. So the first thing we, well, not the first, but something we will do is definitions again. Actually, one of them will be the first, and the first thing, since I'm done with this, will be to define the derivative. And then the other thing will be its inverse, the integral. Okay, and then we're going to look at studying spaces of functions, and that's what's going to be sort of novel and different from what happened in Math 21. So we'll study spaces of functions. Okay, and we will do this in analogy with spaces that you're already familiar with, like R2. So analogous space, the plane, and instead we'll study spaces of functions. And we'll try to do the same sorts of things that we did before, that we did with the planes. And so one is to consider nice functions. And that can mean several things. For us, it's mostly going to mean polynomials, because those you understand how to differentiate and work with well. But you can also do trig, which you also know how to differentiate. So that's the other class which will come up now and then. And the analogy over here with R2 would be rational points. So nice points. Rational points you know, like A, B, and C, D. And so if in the plane you have some point that you're trying to approximate, you can approximate this rational point. So that'll be the idea. And then we will try to consider limits. Of these to get more functions. So just like over with the reals, we could approximate something like pi root 3. So this is some point here, pi root 3, okay? And we can approximate it by nice points, by rational points. And so this we can give by, and the way that we usually write that is we write it as a decimal expansion. So 3.1415, et cetera. And 3.1622, et cetera. So this is the way that we would normally write it. But the way that you really think about it is that we're approximating it. We take the point 3 comma 3, and then we take the point 3.1 comma 3.1, and then we just keep going with points that get closer and closer. So that's the way we're doing is we're approximating. And we try to do the same thing over here. So we'll get something like e to the x is a good example. And again, we're going to approximate it by polynomials. So just like with the this decimal expansion, I'm going to give an expansion over here of my exponential in terms of things we know, and the things that we know are going to be the polynomials. So we're going to just write it as 1 plus x plus x squared over 2, x cubed over 3, factorial over 6. So, and we're just going to find an expansion. And again, we'll think of it in the same, a similar way that we did over here. All right. And so this is a function that you already understood in some ways. So this is useful as a solution to a differential equation. And it gives exponential growth and decay. It comes up a lot in physics, so common in physics. And it's easy, it has a nice, smooth, pretty graph like so. On the other hand, another class of function we will look at is the Weierstrass function. And this is a little bit more along the lines of what this course is going to focus on, although we look at both. And this one, W of X, I'm going to use this other class of nice functions, these are trig polynomials, and get an expansion that way. And so it's going to be written in terms of a trig function. So it'll be cosine of x plus 1/2 cosine of 3x plus 1/4 cosine of 9x. And it's just going to keep going as powers of 2 and powers of 3. And again, we will think of it just as in all these other cases as an approximation that keeps going. And this one turns out to be, there's a nice picture of it in the book. It's really hard to graph by hand because it's extremely jagged. And nonetheless, it comes up, or at least things similar to this come up, similar functions come up in physics. As paths of particles in a liquid. Okay, they just get hit by things, and so they move around in a very jagged manner. And this turns out, surprisingly, to be a pretty good approximation for how that works. So, anyway, it's a way of getting your hands on these on functions by taking sequences. And again, you should bear in mind how it worked over here. Now, there are going to be a lot of new complications that happen when we try to do this for functions, and that's why you need a whole course to try to understand how to do it. But that's the analogy you should have in mind. Okay, then in the end, we will summarize the nice properties. So both of these have sufficiently nice properties that we give it a name. So both examples of Banach algebras. Okay, so this is covered a little bit in chapter 13. So we will summarize those nice properties. And it turns out those are very nice properties, and we will then look for other sets of functions that have this type of property. And in fact, much of analysis these days is that study. So many more covered in more advanced courses called functional analysis. One of which is offered at Davis. Okay, so that's a very vague overview of where we're headed. If there are no questions about that vague overview, then I would actually like to start with the definition. Oops, not of the of just the derivative today, and start doing some examples. Okay, so let me start then with the definition of the derivative. And this is 8.1 in the Hunter's notes. So if we have a less than c less than b, and we have a function f, which takes the interval a, b to the reals, then yeah, we write f prime of c, or sometimes I'll write it with a capital D if the prime seems a little too small for whatever I'm doing. Okay, so it's just another notation for the derivative. And this is the same difference quotient that was defined in 21 and then very quickly moved on, but there are actually two ways to write it. So one is a h goes to zero of f of h plus c minus f of c divided by h. And the other is the limit as x goes to c. Actually, can anyone see what would go here? So if I'm gonna write it as a limit of as x goes to c, so how are c and h related? Okay, well, so if x is going to c, then I'm going to take x to be h plus c is the way those two things are related. So now when I try to put this in, so what's this first f going to be a function of? Is that clear? So, oops. Right, so what would go here? What am I taking f of?
Can I go ahead?
Mm-hmm.
F of x minus f of c.
Correct, right? So does that make sense, everyone? So the x is the x plus it is the h plus c, so that's what goes in there, x. And the c is just the c, so we have a c there, right? Exactly. So so we have f of x minus f of c, and then the h is oops. X h is x minus c. There we go. Okay. All right. So those are the two ways to write it, and the picture is that we have c somewhere here between a and b. And we have a function that's defined between a and c, but not at the endpoints, a and b rather. And so in particular, it's got a value here at c. And then the ratios that we have here are the slopes of these secant lines. This is a slope of a secant. And then when you get all the way over to the limit, then you get the slope of the tangent line. So these get closer and closer until you end up with something that looks like this, which would be the slope of the tangent line, and that's our derivative. Okay, and then just a little bit more notation, and then I'll run through some examples. So, if this exists, it's a limit, so it might exist, it might not exist, right? We say that f is differentiable at c. And if it exists for every value between a and b, so s is differentiable, which I'll usually abbreviate, at every value in the interval a, b, then we say f is differentiable in that. In or on the interval a, b. This notation, okay? Okay, so let's do some examples. So so let's just start with an easy one. So don't forget what you already know. So feel free to use everything you already know from mass 21. All right. So for example, if I take so one here, let's say f. I'll use subscripts so I can line up my functions with the example number. So f1 of x is equal to let's say x squared. So something something simple. So then f1 prime of say 3. So what is that? Just from your rules.
Should be 6, right?
It should be exactly. That's exactly right. So it's exactly what you remember from your other from your previous classes. This is just 2 times 3. Or 6, right? And this is just from the rule. X squared prime is equal to 2x. Okay, but we can also, for this one, let me just also do the definition just to make sure that it's consistent. And from then on, I'll just use whichever one works, but whichever one's easier. So, or using the rule, I'm sorry, the definition, we have that f1 prime at 3 is by the definition over here, it's supposed to be this limit. Let's write this one. So you could use either one. So this will be the limit as h goes to 0 of f of h plus 3 minus f of 3 divided by h. But what is f of h plus 3? Oh, sorry, I dropped my ones. F1, sorry. So it's just F1, so I just plug it in. So I get h plus 3 squared minus 3 squared. Okay, is that clear? Just plug it into my function. And so now now it's just algebra. So I simplify the algebra and I have an h squared plus 6h plus 9 minus 9 divided by h. So this is the limit as h goes to 0 of h plus 6. And of course the h part goes to 0 and the 6 stays 6. So this is just 6. So they agree. So that was as we expected. And yes, someone said 6 in the chat, correct. Okay, so I hope that's clear. So that's the definition, that's how you use it. All right, so let's try one where we actually have to use it now and just see how that works. All right, so example 2 here. let's take f2 of x to be a function that's defined in parts. So we'll take it to be x squared if x is bigger than 0 and 0 at 0 and also 0 if x is less than 0. So our function now is just 0, and then it takes off as x squared once we get to 0. So that's a graph of our function. Okay, and so if we want to compute f prime sub 2, f sub 2 prime, to compute f sub 2 prime of x. Okay, let's see. So what about at 3? Is it clear what the value is going to be at 3? Yeah, it's going to be 6 again, right? Because the function looks identical to the function we just did in this regime here, which is bigger than 3. And so the first thing to notice about a derivative is that it's a purely local property. So as long as my functions agree in this little neighborhood around 3, I'm going to get the same answer, all right? So since it's local, I can compute in this interval and in this interval just using my rules, okay? So since derivatives are local, the rules work in intervals. Okay, so this is going to be 2x again if x is bigger than 0 and 0 if x is less than 0. Okay, but how am I going to figure out the derivative at 0 itself? So actually, can anyone see what the derivative should be just looking at the graph so that we know what we're headed for? It's often nice to know what you're headed for. So it's supposed to be the slope of the tangent line there. Yeah, exactly. Someone got it. It's 0, right? Because it's flat here, and then it's still pretty flat there, and as it curves up. So it should be 0. So let's just use the definition to get it. So at x equals 0, use the definition. Okay, and so we have that f2 prime at 0 is supposed to be the limit as, let's see, which one should we use this time? Let's take a h again. So as h goes to 0 of f2 of h plus 0 minus f2 of 0 divided by h. And of course, that simplifies quite a bit. So this is the limit as h goes to 0 of f2 of h minus 0 divided by h. So just like that. Okay, and now we want to remember some facts about limits. Recall, and that is that if we're interested in a limit, we can consider a right-handed limit and a left-handed limit and see if they agree, and that'll give us the limit. Okay, so let me just recall that fact. And recall that the limit as x goes to a of say capital F of x is equal to L if and only if both the right and left-hand limits agree, and they're both L. So the limit as x goes to A from the right of f of x is equal to L, and that's also equal to the limit as x approaches A from the left of f of x. So you can check those two things separately. And so we can use that here. So here, the limit as h goes to 0 from the right of f2 of h divided by h. So what is f2 of h if h is bigger than 0? Right, is that clear? So I'm looking at h here being bigger than 0, right? And I'm trying to figure out what f2 of h is when h is bigger than 0. So I have to go back up here to my to the name of my function. And when x is bigger than 0, I just have x squared, right? So I just plug in x squared f2, and I plug h into it. So this is h squared over h, which of course is just h. So then I have the limit as h goes to a zero from the right of h, which is zero. And if I take it from the left, what's different? So now what do I plug in for the numerator? Yeah, it's just zero this time, right? Because now I'm in this case here where the value of x is less than zero, and therefore the function is identically zero. So this is then zero. So this is just the limit of zero, which of course is zero. Okay. So we have that these two are equal, and so that's our limit. And so then I can finish up here and I get zero. Okay, so that's how you do it. There's a mixture of using the rules when you can, because they're faster, and using the definition when you cannot. Okay, so you're stuck doing that. Okay, let's see. I kind of like to try these breakout room things and let you guys try some examples, but let me try two more examples just quickly and then let you guys try a couple. So let me see here. So example number three, so let's take f of x maybe this is the last one okay so is equal to x squared sine of 1 over x. Okay, so that's a more complicated function, and let's see, can anyone see what it looks like? So how would you imagine what it looks like? So the way that I would think about it is, what's the most salient fact about the sine of anything?
It's bounded.
It's bounded, exactly. That's the key point. It's bounded. So the sine of anything lies between minus one and one, right? It's always in there somewhere. So if I take something between minus one and one and multiply it by x squared, well, it's going to be somewhere between x squared and minus x squared, right? Whatever I do. So if I try to graph it, the first thing I can do is I can build this little bound, and I know that whatever my function is, it's got to stay in between those two. Okay. And now it's the sine, so it alternates. So it's going to be something that's going up and down. And it's sine of 1 over x, so it's actually alternating faster and faster. So it's going to look something like this. But we know that it's bounded between that plus x squared and the minus x squared. Okay, so I know that it kind of looks like that. Okay, and so let me try to differentiate it, and then I'll give you guys some examples to try yourself. So so computing, oops, that should have been F3, because I'm trying to be consistent here, so they're different. All right, so F3. So if I want to find the derivative. All right, so how, oh, sorry. Let me be a little bit more careful here. The problem is this is not really defined at x equals zero, right? Because I've got a one over x. And so I want to actually tell you what the value should be. And you can see from this picture what it ought to be, which is zero. So I'm going to make it zero if x is equal to zero. And this other function if x is not zero. Okay, just so that it's completely defined. Okay. All right, and now I want to compute the derivative. So can anyone see how I might approach computing this derivative? Can I use rules or do I have to use the definition? So let's say I wanted to compute the derivative out here at 3. Then how could I do it?
It's been a while since calculus, but maybe try product rule.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, it's a good idea to review your calculus because that's what we're using. But yes, that's right. It will be the product rule because we have these two terms here and we can just use a product rule because our function is perfectly continuous in there. There's no bad phenomenon going on at 3. Only at 0 is there a problem, right? So I can just use the, I'm going to use the product rule, and then how am I going to do this one? What's the other rule that's going to come in?
The chain rule, right?
Chain rule, exactly. Exactly right. So I'll end up using a product rule and chain rule. So compute using chain and product rule. Away from x equals zero, and the rule and the definition at x equals zero. Okay, so I'll end up using these two different methods for the different points. So then we'll end up with f three prime of x is equal to. Okay, so let's see. So let me try to remember my product rule. So I'll take the derivative of the first one. So that's going to be 2x times the second sine of 1 over x plus the first one times the derivative of the second one. And so that's going to be the derivative of the inside function. So that's going to be minus 1 over x squared times the derivative of the outside function. Sine is cosine evaluated at the inside function. So that's going to be my derivative using the product and chain rule together. And that works fine as long as x is not zero, once again, because it's local. And then for x equal to zero, we're going to have to compute the limit. And so f prime three at zero is going to be equal to the limit as h approaches zero of f three of h plus zero minus f3 of zero, which is zero. So let me leave out that step, divided by h. Okay, is that clear? So what did I do here? I had, this was supposed to be h plus zero, but of course that's just h. And then I was supposed to subtract f3 of zero, but this is also zero, right? So I just left that part out. Okay, so that's the limit that I'm trying to compute. And so then this is equal to the limit as h goes to zero of, and let's see, so h squared sine of 1 over h divided by h. And of course, the h's cancel, so I get the limit as h goes to zero of h times the sine of 1 over h. And again, if we make use of the fact that sine is bounded, how what's the limit have to be?
Zero.
Correct. Okay. Does everyone see that? Because the largest this can ever be is h, and the smallest it can be is minus h. So this approaches zero. Okay, so this equals zero. And actually, does anyone remember the name? There's a little name we use when we use that trick.
Squeeze?
Yes, squeeze or sandwich theorem, exactly. Right. Okay, so let me just see if I can make this breakout thing work for a few minutes, and you can just try a few examples. So try in the breakout rooms. The following example. So try g 1 of x is equal to x times the sine of 1 over x, and g 2 of x is equal to x squared if x is rational, and a zero if x is not rational. Okay, and try to answer where is this, where are they continuous? And b, where are they differentiable? Okay, so try to basically take the derivative and see if they're continuous. And let's see, so let me try, I haven't been a long time here, but so let's say, how about the odd breakout rooms try this one and the even ones try that one. Okay. And let me just try making a few breakout rooms here. And see if that works.
Professor, we can't hear you.
I'm sorry, I don't know why I did that. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, all right. Okay, so, G1. So did anyone figure out what's going on with G1 and how is that different from this function we were looking at before, this F3?
It's not bounded in the same way and we don't have continuity at zero.
Okay, it's not bounded in the same way. What's it bounded by this time?
Just by x and minus x.
Mm-hmm. So it looks kind of like this. Okay. I take issue with the second statement, though. Does anyone want to argue for it being continuous at zero? All right, so to be continuous, remember what you need is that the left and right limits of the function itself are the same, not the derivative, right? So what is that limit here? It's zero from both directions. So this is continuous at zero. But what you maybe meant is that it's not differentiable, and that is true. So did anyone try to figure out whether it's differentiable at zero? I guess I should have given you a few more minutes. I claim that this one is not differentiable at zero, right? And yeah. And how would you show that it's not differentiable? Thank you. Someone caught me. I meant to define it at zero, just as I did before. And I forgot to do that. I'm sorry. Yes, it's supposed to be defined at zero, and it's supposed to be zero at zero. I apologize. Yes, as written, you are correct. It's not even defined at zero. I apologize. Okay, but if we define it at zero, to be zero, so like I have here, and then we try to differentiate it, then you'll still find that it's not differentiable. So I seem to have run over time. So I will come back to these examples next time. And the homework problems are also that I will assign later today, and they will be on the webpage, are related to these. So you'll have some practice playing with these. But anyway, they're fun ones to think about. So the other thing that was on my page there is that now that I'm out of time, therefore the lecture is over, I'll stop the recording, but I'm going to stick around. This is now my office hours for the next half hour, and so feel free to stick around also and ask questions.